Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the host of the program and also the blessed guy who's the pastor of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. Each week on this program brought to you by Epiclesis, we talk about this thing called Ancient Future Faith. And this week, we have a brand new guest, although he's not brand new to me, my very dear friend and one of the elders of our church, Norm Covell. Hey, Norm, and welcome.
Well, thanks, Chris. Joy to be here.
This is your first time on the program, yes?
Yes,
it is. Why did it take us so long to do this, Norm? Why?
Well, maybe it's the time in history where I've come up with something that might be of interest to the program.
No, I always get good wisdom nuggets from you all the time. Folks, I call Norm my West Coast dad. My father, who is still alive and kicking, just not as high as we say back home, is in Knoxville, Tennessee. But Norm has been a very special West Coast dad to me ever since we moved here 15 years ago. And you have all kinds of wonderful wisdom, Norm, so don't sell yourself short there.
Well, thank you.
Norm, we could talk about a lot of different things. You've had a very interesting life, but the reason we're together today is to talk about a very special project that you and I did together recently. I often rope you into doing things, and we've had several projects together before. But this one was pretty special, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was more of an invasion.
Well, tell people why, because we took over your garage for a long time.
Yes, we did. I've built a lot of things through the years out of wood, but this is the first time I've ever worked with styrofoam on purpose. A lot of times I've dealt with it in packaging and stuff, and the memories of all that still linger, I think, in the garage in the form of little pebbles.
Little white pebble. Yeah, you're going to have that styrofoam in your garage for years to come. Well, folks, we should tell you what we're talking about. Just recently, and you probably, if you listen to this program, recall us talking about it, but for months we have been planning and working on a wonderful retreat. Norm, in fact, you were with me a year ago when we went to Israel, and we met this amazing young man named Ben Westland, who was giving a tour way out in the desert of the Moses Tabernacle. And it was a life-size replica, right? I mean, full scale. Do you remember the first time you laid eyes on that? Tell us what you thought. I remember it had a big impact on all of us.
Oh, yeah. Of course, there was a busload of us. I think maybe 25, 30 of us that arrived there. And it is out in the middle of nowhere. There was some kind of a settlement and a body of water there nearby us, which I never really understood its purpose. But we entered the tabernacle courtyard, and that's where we met Ben. And it was kind of a wow experience for me.
Me too.
Seeing this thing set up in the middle of the desert. And the first thing that came to my mind was, good Lord, did they take this apart and put it back together each time they moved? And how often was that?
Well, the thing that impacted me in some ways even more than the tabernacle itself was this amazing young man you mentioned, Ben Westland. And if you fast forward a little bit a year, we invited Ben to come all the way to Sacramento to do basically his tabernacle tour. But we needed tabernacle furnishings for him to show, didn't we, Norm? And that was the fateful day that I came to you last summer and said, hey, Norm, how about another project?
Yeah, that's kind of exactly how it happened. And I said, oh, sure. And then learned that I would be housing, I don't know, maybe 15 or so 4x8 slabs of styrofoam stored in the garage from probably the middle of June till we completed the project, which was a couple of weeks before our retreat, which was the 11th and 12th of October.
So, folks, we went over to the community clubhouse in Old Fair Oaks Village near our chapter house offices. And we needed a big space to do this in because we were bound and determined to build each of the tabernacle furnishings in life-size scale. And so we went over to the Lowe's more than once, maybe even more than once a day there for a while. and purchase these huge slabs of styrofoam. Like the kind, it's what is it, Norm? It's the stuff you put like on the outside of the house, right? The insulation.
Oh yeah, there's quite a bit of it used insulation and packing because it's light and they can use it to pack whatever they're mailing or shipping it, and it does protect things very well.
So we really didn't have any instructions other than, well, the Bible. We purchased a wonderful pamphlet that I found online that gives the English style, you know, feet, inches, etc., of the sizes of these things. And we had some rough sketches, and of course the Bible text itself. But what I thought might be interesting for us to talk about today, Norm, is what we learned along the way. Because it occurred to me while we were out there toiling with the table saw and the styrofoam bits blowing all over the place, that you and I kind of had an interesting experience and insight that maybe a lot of people wouldn't get, even if they went and observed these things later. Because when you actually put hand to tool and begin to make these things, I think some interesting insights come about. So think about that for a second as I remind folks that they're listening to a radio program called Ancient Future Faith. It's brought to you each week on KFIA Radio by Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith Christian Church in Sacramento, California. As always, I'd love you to zip over to the Epiclesis website. That's epiclesis.org, E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org, and learn more about us. And best of all, come visit with us on Sunday mornings where we worship at 10:30 at the corner of Winding Way in Pasadena. Norm, you and I learned an awful lot along the way. What are some of the things you think you learned or that we learned as we were putting together, even though it's in styrofoam, of these tabernacle furnishings in life size? I think there were a lot of lessons. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I developed a more fullness of the meaning of all of this. Here it is, Old Testament language that was, what, 1,500 years before Christ, Chris?
Yeah.
And I was just amazed at how precise things had to be. And what evolved in my mind was how exacting God wanted this stuff for a reason. And the measurements were so exacting. And you didn't vary from that as it was being built. And I'm thinking, wow, this was a very special place built specifically for the worship of our God. Mm-hmm. And jumping ahead to the 20th and 21st century, unfortunately, how casual Christianity and the worship of God has become, especially in our culture.
Yeah, for sure.
In addition to that, I think we had some questioning times trying to figure out how we were going to join all this stuff together. And we had some oops occasions along the way where we messed up and had to redo stuff, and kind of laughed at that time, wondering how many times the original guys putting all this stuff together screwed up, and how difficult it was for them to make a change and have to do something over.
Yeah, they didn't have a table saw, did they?
No.
Those original guys that Norm is talking about are named in Scripture. Their names were Bezalel and Aholiab. And as Ben taught us, Norm, even the craftsmen's names themselves had meaning. Bezalel means in the image of or in the outline of God. So he is actually doing what his name implies. He's fulfilling the plans that God has, this outline. He's creating what God has done. And then the other fellow, whose name is Aholiab, means something to the effect of a tent for God or God's tent. And so each of them actually had names. Isn't that marvelous that God sovereignly did that to describe what it is that they were doing? Before we go on to the bit about the oops moments, and yes, there were several, I want to just circle back and talk a little more, because I think what you just said there was incredibly profound. God, who hasn't changed, was very specific about how he wanted his people to approach him. How do we approach a holy God? And you were saying there that maybe we have a lesson to learn in churches today. Expand on that just a bit, would you? What do you mean by that?
Well, when you put this together and understand that God has a plan, and that here we are in the 21st century now, becoming a part of that plan. And God's plan, as Chris said, hasn't varied a bit. So here 1,500 years later, he's asking for specificity in how his people would come together and worship him. And it's so enriching for me to find further and understand more the fact that our God wanted to dwell with us and be with us. And here he sets about to create this tabernacle in the wilderness. I mean, it's nothing like we have today where you could travel for 400 miles and check into the Holiday Inn that
night.
Right,
right.
and have everything set up. They had to pick this stuff up and move it, and it was all because God wanted to dwell with his people.
That's really the bottom line, isn't it? God's desire from the beginning, from the garden, even before the garden, was to dwell in the midst of his people. And after we fall away from him into sin in the garden, he lovingly provides a way back. And it's a beautiful picture, the tabernacle, of our ultimate heavenly destination. Some people listening to you might say, well, hey, you know, we have Jesus. We don't have to worry about approaching God in this way. But one of the things I've learned along the way about the tabernacle is that the tabernacle points to Jesus in so many ways. And if we miss the tabernacle, if we miss its meaning, we might also miss something about the person and work of Jesus. Norm, you were talking about how we had some oops moments there. So there we are in your styrofoam-covered garage using your table saw and your grandmother's bread knife, which we got to talk about at some point, and we're cutting these things out. And yes, there were times when, oh, I thought you said an inch and a half. Or, no, that's supposed to be a foot or whatever. What did you learn from the mistakes that we made in putting together the tabernacle replicas?
Well, right away, we're reminded of the frailty and exactness, you know, of our own lives. Even though we try to do things perfect and follow what God wants us to do, sometimes for one reason or another, and it can be something as simple as turning loose of a piece of styrofoam before it gets through the saw it becomes airborne across the garage.
Which happened several times.
So, yes,
we were saying there along the way that there were probably times when old Aholiab and Bezalel wished they were working in styrofoam or maybe wished that they had a table saw. But the mistakes that we made really, I don't know, in a weird way helped me connect with them. Does that make sense? I mean, you sort of put yourself in their shoes or sandals, so to speak, and you begin to realize how huge this project was. And yeah, how exacting God expected these measurements to be.
Yeah, and it kind of puts you in your place in terms of the imperfections in our life compared to what God's expectation was in order to properly worship him back in that time.
There were times when we were tempted, or at least I was, to say, that's close enough. But then we'd come back around later and go, we can't do that, can we? It's not like our faces are going to melt off if we didn't get the Ark of the Covenant right. But we really wanted it to be as best as we possibly could.
Oh, yeah. I think we recounted over and over again during the time we worked on these that this is for God. So we just don't slap it together and throw a coat of paint on it and say that's good enough.
Right, for sure. Folks, we're talking about the individual pieces of the tabernacle furniture or furnishings. And my guest today is Norm Covell. He's one of our Epiclesis elders. He's also a wonderful craftsman. And he and I have worked together on many projects. But this one was really special. Over the course of several weeks, we worked in his garage, which he's still cleaning up after all this stuff, to put together the seven pieces of tabernacle furnishings. We're talking about the giant altar. And boy, it was giant, wasn't it? I mean, I think people don't realize how huge that thing is. The wash basin, the table of showbread, the menorah, the candlestick, the altar of incense, and then the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat that sits on top of it. Norm, it seems like it never ended, right? We went on and on and on and on, and we kept pushing and kept pushing, but toward the end, things began to come together. Are there any aspects of the building of these pieces that stick out to you more than others? We were talking about your grandmother's bread knife, for example, a minute ago, and the fine detail that we were able to do, even in styrofoam. What comes to mind as you're thinking about us putting together all these pieces?
Well, the realization that God had a purpose in all of these, and to realize the meaning of that as we went along, that I think I said earlier, it brought me to fullness of the meaning of this, that it wasn't just something that was put together and people used it for worship and then went on about their work week or work month and nothing else was thought about it. But it instilled within me an understanding that we have a loving God that wants to dwell with us, and he has specific requirements in order to do that. And whether it was getting grandma's bread knife out to carve some curves, or what we found to work better was our electric carving knife.
Yeah.
We got that out and brought that into the service for the Lord.
Did it survive, by the way?
It did.
Oh, good.
Well, let me think now. I've found one of the two blades. One of them is still in hiding somewhere, so it's rendered useless temporarily.
I'll tell you what strikes me about it. This is one of the most interesting things, at least to me. It may not be to you, but let's talk about it. It occurs to me that, yes, on the one hand, there are places where God is very exact about the measurements and how wide the thing should be and how tall the thing should be in terms of the sides, or you should decorate it thusly. In the case of the menorah, that was very, very exacting. Dimensions, those kinds of things were very exacting. But Norm, did it strike you, as it did me, that there were also times when God is silent about how something should be finished, and in a wonderful way lets his creative people, Aholiab and Bezalel, fill in the gaps? That really struck me, how beautiful the partnership was then in some ways between the craftspeople and God. Did that hit you that way?
Oh, yes. Yeah, to get to a point where we'd say, well, this needs some trim on it, or this space needs something there to fill a void, and what should it be? And so we had this license, if you will, to be creative in the absence of the specificity of God's requirements. And we toyed around with a couple of different things until something looked good or fit the situation and basically improved the looks of what we had put together. I'm thinking about the scroll work that you had come up with for the borders of table of breads and the altar of incense. We put some things together there, I think, that really dressed those up, and it didn't turn it into something that was not a holy instrument for the worship of God. I think it enhanced that styrofoam.
Yeah, for sure.
And as we spray painted it there to complete it, it fit right in terms of making it a more grander, if that's a term, than it would otherwise have been.
Yeah, I'm just knocked out. Maybe this is something I need to meditate more on, but folks, think about this just for a second. God was very precise about, say, the dimensions of some things, but he also was silent about some things, at least what we know of through Scripture. And he lets the artists do what they do best and fill in the rest. Isn't that just like a loving God that gives us boundaries, that gives us direction, that shows us the way he wants things to go? But then in a divine human, partnership, God lets us bring our skills to bear as well. I thought that was a really precious lesson, Norm, that I wouldn't have learned unless we had actually done the physical labor of trying to create these things.
Oh, yeah. When you think about the blessing that God has given us and the abilities that he instills within us, the ability to be creative is one of those, and I would say there's a level of expectation there that the Lord would want us to use that where it is not prescribed.
All right.
And allow us to move forward with something and make it more beautiful than it would otherwise have been. Not that I'm comparing the grandeur of what we did out of styrofoam to what appeared in the actual desert tabernacle.
No, for sure. There were all kinds of little interesting lessons we learned because we actually put hand to tool. In some ways, I recommend it for everybody. At least maybe do a little model of some of these things. I have to tell one funny story before we get around to the big aha moment again, which we kind of have touched on, but I think it'd be good to underscore. So God really did a neat thing for us, people. I got to tell you this story. We're sort of admitting a little behind the scenes what we thought was a mistake, but he actually fixed it. The Lord did. We're painting these things, and the painting process, Norm, you remember, was a pretty rigorous two-step process. When you're doing a metallic kind of paint, at least the brand that we were using, it requires an undercoat of a similar color. So we got out the sprayer, we're spraying these things, thanks to Carl Shirley, our partner in crime, and he's spraying all these things out, and we began to spray the bronze laver, or the wash basin. And you may recall, I don't know if you were there at the time, Norm, but you may recall that it came out looking really pink. I mean, really bad pink, like Pepto-Bismol pink. And we began to really think, what is going on here? We are in trouble. These things weren't pink, for heaven's sakes. And so I picked up the can, and it said something about copper. And I thought, oh no, we've made a terrible mistake. Well, I went back and looked at the paint samples, and they didn't have anything called bronze. So we began to panic, or at least I did. So I wrote Ben and I said, listen, I got something bad to tell you. We started painting this thing and all they had that looked even close to bronze was this copper paint. And it's going on really pink. What do we do? And he said, well, actually, don't panic. The truth of the matter is the Hebrew is originally copper. And when you read in your Bibles about the bronze wash basin or the bronze altar, it's actually not a very good translation. It would have been rendered copper. And I said, oh my goodness, what a wonderful miracle. And then, as if that were not enough, when the paint began to dry, it began to change. And the little metal, what would you call that, Norm? Little metal bits or whatever, the flakes that are in the paint, began to come to the surface. And the color changed from really awful pink to a beautiful, bright, penny copper. It was a miracle, wasn't it?
It was, and quite a surprise. But when you look at what was occurring in the geology and the development of that country from years back, there was copper mining going on not too far. Memphis is still part of the Timna National Park.
That's right.
Where this is located, and quite a bit of copper was pulled out of there. So it was natural that they would take advantage of that and use it for this purpose.
Well, folks, you've been listening to an interview with Norm Covell. We are talking about our wonderful adventure in building life-size replicas of the Moses Wilderness Tabernacle furnishings. And Norm, I just want to end up by just asking you, I guess, your biggest takeaway of what you learned by actually following in the steps of Aholiab and Bezalel and recreating these furnishings.
Well, number one, that God's purpose in his story hasn't changed from the beginning. And as we found out and learned the meaning of everything that we put together and how it's arranged, it's a process of entering into the tabernacle. First thing you do is take care of the sin in your life through the sacrificial altar. You move into the labor, which is the location at which you cleanse yourself. Then you move into the holy place. And there's so much that I've learned that points to Jesus Christ and the direction that he would have us move through in order to fellowship with him in 2019.
Yeah, it does all point to Jesus, doesn't it?
It does.
Jesus is the bread of the face of God, the bread come down from heaven. Jesus is the light, the menorah, the light of the world. Our prayers ascend as in incense. And then, miracle of miracles, because of Jesus, we can enter into the most holy place and be in his presence. And as you said, that's been his desire from the very beginning, to dwell with his people.
That's right. That hasn't changed one bit.
Well, Norm, I want to thank you for visiting with us today on Ancient Future Faith. This wasn't too bad, was it? Was it okay?
Oh, yeah. I've told you everything I know, so don't ask me very soon to be on this again.
My guest today has been my friend and West Coast dad, Norm Covell, who helped us build the wonderful tabernacle furnishings for a recent retreat we had. And as we were talking about what we had learned along the way, we wanted to share it with you folks in our Ancient Future Faith audience. Norm, thanks again for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Folks, until we gather again for another episode of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Surely the road to our evangelical future runs through our Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi folks, it's Pastor Chris with one more word before we sign off. The long season after Pentecost is the perfect time to experience worship at Epiclesis, or maybe jump into a small group. There's always something happening at Epiclesis, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. Think about joining us for worship this summer. You'll be warmly welcome. As always, find more information on the web at epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.